Good afternoon. This morning, the verses that we looked at this morning, they were expressing their aspiration in prayer that in order to actually enter through the doorway of the Mahayana, then one needs to generate the minds of love and compassion, generating to them to the point where one gives rise to the mind of special intention, which is where one takes responsibility for the individual welfare of each and every sentient being. So to express this term, special intention, in a way that carries more of the meaning, then maybe we can say, give rise to the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility, where the practitioner is making the commitment to lead each and every sentient being to a state of lasting, stable happiness, a state freed of suffering. So this is the mind of the altruistic attitude of universal responsibility. And then having generated this mind, then bodhicitta follows, which requires that extra step of, and in order to do this, I will become a Buddha. So this mind of bodhicitta then is the doorway for entering into Mahayana practice. Having entered into, now passed through the doorway to the Mahayana, and conjoining this mind of bodhicitta with joyous perseverance, then the practitioner has the strength of mind required to continue to strive for enlightenment through the activities of hearing and studying, contemplation and reflection, and meditation. And when these three are conjoined, the mind of bodhicitta, together with the powerful joyous perseverance, and then thirdly, with the activities of hearing, reflecting, and meditating, then enlightenment is quickly attained. And through this whole process, tremendous benefit comes not just for oneself, but for others too. This whole process leading up to the fulfillment of the goals of a bodhisattva, benefit comes to self and to other. So this was the aspiration expressed in the prayer this morning. Now in this next verse, we come to look at we take this one step further. And then just to say from my side, this morning I didn't get it quite right, so I'll get it right now. So what this verse then is coming to present, that when we've come to rely on a spiritual guide, a teacher who's qualified to teach us the Mahayana Dharma and to train us in how to develop through reflection and meditation on the Mahayana Dharma. Here what we need to abandon is the mind of misplaced contentment. So this was the word I missed this morning. We need to abandon this mind of misplaced contentment. This mind that would think, oh, I've studied this, I've received many teachings in that, I don't need to come to this class, or I don't need to reflect any further on that. This misplaced contentment needs to be avoided, and that is what is expressed in the next prayer.
Namda rupiye tupye sunrup tene jishin che la shenjing mi jokpe kebe gamdo taye sunrup la mumba mi pe kepa che pa shogo se manam adus jamna hechere.
This brings us to the 13th verse, and I'll read ever so slightly changed version. I pray that I listen insatiably to countless teachings at the feet of a master, single-handedly with the power of logic unflawed, prizing open scripture's meanings.
Namda review to you, son of the ancient. Chisana, and that number review to you, son of the ancient. That's also the Chevache, and Dambo and Sosurangi, and Chiki Lama Shandas in the Tun and Duhendelia, repeat some down, repeat some of the Chevache, and the Duhendi, and Sanya Jimden, you son of you, son of the Duhendi, Sosuki, and it's me.
I'll read the verse again, because this verse, the English and Tibetan, is very mixed. I pray that I listen insatiably to countless teachings at the feet of a master, single-handedly with the power of logic unflawed, prizing open scripture's meaning. Here, the aspiration that is being expressed is that that is being expressed builds on what we have been looking at in preceding verses. Having met and come to rely on a qualified teacher, one is receiving teachings on the Mahayana Dharma from this teacher. And one's receiving many, many teachings from them and studying with great effort. And conjoined with this, one is investigating, one is using one's reasoning, one is investigating, we hear with unflawed logic, one is investigating investigating the teachings that one is receiving. And one is doing so, both of these activities of hearing and of contemplation, repeatedly over a sustained period, until a valid cognizer arises. In other words, an incontrovertible understanding of what the teachings one has received arises within oneself. And then through this power, one is able to single-handedly prize open the scripture's meaning, which means, this single-handedly, it's through the power of this reasoning that has led to the arisal of a valid cognizer which incontrovertibly understands the meaning of what has been taught, that one does this through one's own power and thereby no longer needs to go and ask someone, oh, what does this mean? Or in this circumstances, how does it apply? One has gained an incontrovertible understanding. So this has come about through receiving many teachings, repeatedly reflecting on these teachings over a sustained period, and thereby giving rise to a valid cognizer of in relation to what has been taught. Let's look a little bit more then at this term here, single-handedly. So this then, more literally, it's showing an emphasis on oneself. So the meaning is that oneself has come to understand the Buddha Dharma through one's own efforts, in particular, one's contemplation. So the hearing and study aspect, one does oneself in relation on one's teacher, follows their advice in how to contemplate and reflect on those teachings, but one has to do this oneself, and through doing so repeatedly over a sustained period, then one gives rise to a valid cognizer, a correct understanding of what one has been receiving teachings on and contemplating. And then when this has happened, and first of all, sorry, this can only come about through this sequence. One needs to gather knowledge, reflect on that knowledge, and through doing this repeatedly, one's understanding becomes unmistaken. Those to have an unmistaken understanding requires these preceding steps. If either is missing, one will not give rise to an unmistaken or an incontrovertible understanding. And then, to attain such a valid cognizer, one needs to reflect. And that means one reflects with reasoning or with logic, with analysis, with investigations, with logic. And one's logic needs to be unflawed, or again, the literal word would be correct or valid. So one needs to use unflawed logic, analyzing the teachings, thinking for oneself. And it's through thinking for oneself that so for oneself is the single-handedly, and the thinking is the logic, that one gives rise to a unmistaken understanding, a valid cognizer. So this is particularly important for two reasons. One, for one's own spiritual development, one needs to have unmistaken understandings. Secondly, in order to benefit others, as we've heard, the most meaningful way to benefit others is to teach them the Dharma so that they too can cultivate virtue, cultivate merit, as well as develop the antidote to suffering, wisdom realizing emptiness. So that to be able to teach others the Buddha Dharma, one has to understand it, and one has to understand it in a way that is incontrovertible, is unmistaken. So this is the second reason why one has to go through this process of studying, reflecting, meditating in order to give rise to valid cognizers, so that one can teach others too in an unmistaken manner. And to give then an illustration then of unmistaken logic, so on a simple level, from a seed comes a sprout. Where did the sprout come from? It came from the seed. And from this type of seed, only that type of sprout will come. So that's logic, it's unmistaken, easy to understand. Not on, in itself going to lead to liberation. So what one particularly, the area of logic particularly to develop would be, all phenomena are empty of inherent existence. So this we hear. But that's a statement. For to have impact, we need to know why. And then why it leads one to needing a valid reason. All phenomena are empty of inherent existence because they are dependent arisings. One thing relies on another, one thing relies on another, which is a meaning of dependent arising. All things, all phenomena are empty of inherent existence because they are dependent arisings, in that one thing relies on another. And with this unmistaken understanding, one can present the Buddha Dharma in an unmistaken manner.
And then, KB come to Tayosun Rabla, Momba maybe Tuba Chiba shows. That KB, Keba said, the genial, the silver, that Namda, Sun Rabu, Tue, and Tigia, Tue, Momba Chase, Ma Shevala, Shana Tuma, Rupa, Rang Doki, and Sosugi Yamyong. Dopy, Ribby, Dopy, and Yanji Shan, the Chibu Kala, Ribayanda, Pate, Jab, Ribayanda, Tony, Jesse, Jab, Jema, Din to Yadi, Rando, Din to Yadilla, then they get into the Kabasura, then they get into the Kabadizalia, Shu, Gobra, Duso, Kabe, Gamdo, Sura Blas, then they get Sura Yama, Jugasan, then they get Kabalama, then they get another Chu, Gobra, then they, or the Yamanga, Shu, that time.
Self-focusing. What we was just explained were the first two Tibetan lines. Now we come to the second two Tibetan lines. So for us, those are really the first two. I pray that I listen insatiably to countless teachings at the feet of a master. So what we've just heard is that one needs to receive many teachings, and one needs to not just passively receive, but one needs to reflect on the meaning of what is being received. So that is both hear and contemplate. One needs to, and when one contemplates, one needs to do so with intelligence, with logic, with reasoning. And one needs to do this repeatedly over a sustained period. So the key points that we're hearing here is that as the student, one needs to use our intelligence. We need to use our analytical skills, our reasoning skills, our logic, our investigative skills. So this is the first key point. Now, moving to the first two lines, we need to come to understand the Dharma. We need to rely on a qualified teacher, a teacher who is qualified to explain the Mahayana Dharma. So we have the word here, master. So the word, what it means, has two components. It's often translated as perhaps a scholar or the learned, but it has two components. The one being someone who is greatly learned in the area, and secondly, has realization of the area, of the topic. So they have intelligence and they have experience. They're wise and they're experienced. So knowledge and experience is what is meant by this term we have here as a master. So the Mahayana spiritual teacher that we're relying on is someone with both knowledge and experience. And when we're receiving teachings from them, we should be doing so with utilizing our wisdom. So that's the first point. And the first point is the wisdom. The second was the qualities of the teacher. The third, then, is that we must guard ourselves from coming under the influence of misplaced contentment or misplaced contentment, which means we should listen with insatiability. Whether a teaching is just going to be a short talk, or whether it's going to be for a weekend or for a longer course such as this, whatever the breadth, whatever the profundity, with great joy and delight at the opportunity to ever deepen our knowledge and our experience, we should receive teachings. So we should have an attitude of insatiability and not one of misplaced contentment. So the advice that Jayapriya is giving to his students in this prayer is that it's about the attitude that someone striving to become a being of greatest benefit for all should have. Because without such an attitude, then enlightenment would be severely, the attainment of enlightenment would be severely impeded. So the student has come to rely on a teacher that they have confidence based on their experience, that this teacher is both knowledgeable in the Mahayana Dharma and has experience of the Mahayana Dharma. So they've come to the point where they're relying on a teacher with this correct attitude. Then whenever the teacher bestows teachings, the student should have an attitude of great joy, of delight. No matter what the subject is or the duration, joy and delight should arise. This is whether it's something that is difficult to understand or whether it's something that the student feels, I've received these teachings many times. Neither attitude would be attitude would be appropriate in that they'd be harmful, they'd create an obstacle to the development of the student. So, for example, I've received teachings on the Lama and from His Holiness many times. So I know, each time I go to receive teachings from His Holiness, the text, I know well. The topics that are covered, I know very well. But nevertheless, because I go with an open mind, with joy at receiving the teaching, I'm not overcome by any misplaced contentment. Rather, because of having an open attitude, an excitement and joy at being able to receive teachings from His Holiness, even though it's a topic I know very well, my knowledge will improve. And my experience of that topic will develop. Because even when we hear the same teaching again and again, if we're listening, we're not sitting there distracted, we're listening, we are engaging in thinking about that topic. Especially if we are using our wisdom, using our intelligence. So this is the second key point. The one was the joy, and now the second key point, the wisdom. And so here we should be using our wisdom. Even though we're hearing the topic again and again, by using our wisdom, we will understand something that we haven't understood before, even though the words maybe haven't changed very much. But because of the merit gained due to our positive attitude, we are able to understand it in a deeper way. Our knowledge and our experience will grow. Whereas if we have this mind of misplaced contentment, that will block what could have happened. Even when you hear the same teaching, you're listening to a recording and you're hearing that same teaching again, if you're not overcome by misplaced contentment but rather have an attitude of insatiability, your knowledge will deepen, your experience will deepen.
Monam
As I was expressed in a previous class, the title of this text, A Prayer for the Beginning, Middle and End of Practice, can also be understood in the context of hearing, reflecting and meditating. And it was said that throughout we need to do all three, but it's especially as beginners we have to receive many teachings in order to gather knowledge. So now the part of the text to do with hearing is done, and now we come to the part emphasizing the second of those practices, that of reflection or contemplation. And so this then we can liken to the middle in this illustration. And the need for reflection is so as to develop our wisdom and give rise to ever a more profound insights through reflecting on what we are studying, reflecting on the teachings that we are receiving.
ချေချေပါလားအဲ့ဒီတင်ချေပါချေကူကူလေချေချေထွေနေထွေချေညမ်းချေပါလားတင်ချေပါချေကူကူလေဒီနေသားအဲ့ဒီမီလူရမချေတာအဲ့ဒီနာနေမီလူရမချေပါရှောဆရာတာအဲ့ဒီမီလူရမချေနာနေရအဲ့ဒီရပ်ချင်းတင်ချေပါချင်းထောပါရှောဆရာဒီနေ့ကြီးမော်လုံးကြာတာဒီနေ့အားချေရအားရပ်ချင်းတင်ထောပချေချေညမ်းချေပါလားချေပါချေမချေရှိခင်ငါတို့အမ်ချိုလေထွေပါလားရှိခင်ချေကူကူလေထွေပြန်ညမ်းချေပါလား ชื่อสุงกันจะกูเลยเดี๋ยวสุงกันอันนี้เกี่ยวกับสิ่งนี้อยากจะเทวะเชื่อสัมมาลัมจายนะเดี๋ยวนี้อันนี้เกี่ยวกับสิ่งนี้ที่เทเชมาชื่อสุงนั่นคือแบบละอันนี้จีเกะเดี๋ยวสุอันนี้กุโนะที่เกะกุโนะจังชูสิมิกุเนล่าอะไรนะอันนี้จีจุนจีกินยามเนจายนะชื่อเทวะจุนจีกินยามเนจายนะเดี๋ยวนี้กี่อันที่มีว่าชื่อสัมมาลัมจายนะเดี๋ยวนี้กี่ชื่อเทเช
อันนี้ที่เกิดเสื่อมเสียยามเดือดโอเสียดงานเจียดาที่นี่งานยัดยิ่งมาเจ้าเสื่อมเสียมาลำเจียดาอันที่นี่เรื่องนี้สิ่งนั้นจุเนี่ยที่เป็นยามเนี่ยเจ้าก็เนี่ยเกี่ยวกับมาลำเจียดเจียเสียดวะแล้วแต่เสียดสัมบิกิสัมแต่ที่เกิดเดือดเดียร์สัมต่างเจียยามเนี่ยเจียดาอันยามเนี่ยอยากไปเจ้าเสื่อมเสียเสียดีดาแล้วบาร์วะเกี่ยวกับที่วิกิมาลำสิ่งเดียวบาร์ดทั้งหมดที่เป็นยามเนี่ยเจ้ามาลำอยากทราบเสีย
And if we think of the three, the hearing, reflection, and meditation, and we've just heard then that the part on hearing has just concluded, and we're starting now the part on reflecting. So we can say the beginning is concluded, and we're coming to the middle. So how then has what we've been hearing up to this point applied to the hearing part or the listening part of hear, contemplate, and meditate? Well, the aspirations that have been expressed started with an aspiration to attain a favorable rebirth, and in particular one of a precious human rebirth. Because as a human being, one has the capacity to hear teachings. Certainly in the lower realms this is not possible. One can't hear or listen or understand. So therefore, the aspirational prayers to continue to receive favorable rebirths, in particular that of a precious human rebirth, and once having attained a precious human rebirth, to utilize it in the most beneficial way in terms of our spiritual progression, to achieve ordination, and having achieved ordination, to have all conducive circumstances to hear teachings. So therefore these are also included within the first, that of hearing. And then in order to hear teachings, then the aspirations were expressed that one needs a qualified teacher that one understands as being or recognizes as being qualified. And we heard about the qualities that are required, in brief, both knowledge and experience. And thereafter, still staying within the section of listening or hearing, then we spoke about the motivation with which to receive teachings, motivation of bodhicitta. And we spoke about how to overcome all obstacles that do come and succeed very quickly. One needs to receive teachings, to listen, to hear, with joyous perseverance. It's mind that's taking delight in the opportunity we have. And then lastly, we heard that as one develops, be aware of pride, be aware of that danger of pride arising within oneself. So that's where we've got up to, and that's included within hearing. Now we start on reflection or contemplation, the middle part of this prayer for virtue. Now we come to the 14th verse, where we express an aspiration to give rise to the wisdom arising from contemplation. Having examined day and night with fourfold logic all that I have heard, may I banish every doubt with the discerning understanding that arises from such contemplation. Looking at the first two lines, having examined day and night with fourfold logic all that I have heard. So here, at this point, one has received many teachings on the Mahayana Dhamma and has been engaging in reflection on this meaning. And here the encouragement is to continue with this. Continue with this with great enthusiasm, reflecting day and night, using in particular logics. We have here the fourfold logic. So using our reasoning, our intelligence, and a logic that is both unmistaken and non-deceptive, so as to come to the true meaning of the Mahayana Dhamma. So the first then refers to the use of valid logic. So valid logic is to be used day and night, and it's to be used until one gives rise to a valid cognition with regard to the teachings that one has received. So until one gains a realization that is incontrovertible with regard to the teachings, one needs to apply fourfold logic. The fourfold logic then are reasoning of dependency, being the first, dependency as in dependence arising, reasoning of dependency, the reasoning of function, you know, function activity, maybe reasoning or function, the reasoning that correctly establishes. So this would be a valid cognizer, the reasoning that correctly establishes, and fourthly, the reasoning of the nature of things. So these are the four types of reasoning, that of dependency, of function, that which correctly establishes, and the nature of things, or the nature of phenomena, perhaps, the nature of phenomena. Giving rise to valid cognition, as one comes to the stage where one can banish every doubt. And this is done through the use of discerning understanding, or discerning analysis, or discerning investigation. And this comes from such contemplation. So the meaning then of the last three lines here is that engaging in this analysis or investigation through fourfold logic repeatedly over a sustained period, then one comes to a very profound understanding of the object that one is investigating. So whatever the subject matter is that one is investigating, that object, one's mind comes to understand that in a profound way. And one gives rise to a valid cognizer, an understanding that is incontrovertible with regard to that object. So here, then, this powerful wisdom arises. And this wisdom eliminates any doubts or a lack of clarity, lack of understanding one has with regard to this object. And this is done through a discerning understanding, which is, again, this analytical, investigating mind. And that arises from contemplation.
ngi anim pe nga de kala kala lu chin ne ding ngi kala di ten shen chi le jeo wo san be sam lo di ne jin ba le sa de sa chi di sam lo di jin ba yin ne da ye ne sam lo di din a le ka yo la da di na ne ya ne che ba la di na de ne sem jung yo da ru wa di da ne sem yo re so sem ji ko le ya an ne so wa du xie sem ba yi le che ba le ha se na yu wo le sem jung ko ron ji be ne 그 죽념도 용고래. 세상 되는 죽념나자디 죽네 그게 제 차상 진발에 찍 진발에 니 진발에 그게 됐어. 제발 제 두 전에 제발 제도 딱 안 제례 안 돼. 제 이제 파미 제 오선 비기 진비게 동에 센바라고 와. 세상 동에 센바라도 디 안에 샘주 차들. 세상 진바세대 다 샘주들이야. 세상 전에 제비가 가랑라 소화 찌레디 리교로. 소화코나 직제호선비 칼라마스나 칼라게 제 칼라디 진바레 힘이도스다 칼라디 진바레 힘이도 지난 칼라제세게 유디한 진바레 힘이도 다 진바디 가려나네 땡에 제 와서비 군원데 리한 진바레 힘이도 다 가르스다 니 가서리 동에 셈바스 니트바 샹라 찌기 셈비게 삼바 셈바시오로 와다 제디 파 파동에 삼바 셈바시 어디자 진바레 샤스네 두체데 제바 어디 진바디레 샤스네 삼로다 하고 해도
但金币给我的地铁上我拉车吧，拉车要不然人家金币那些，可能我拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车吧，拉车
Let's make this a bit clearer through giving an example, giving an illustration. So you've all received many teachings on the Buddha Dhamma, and when we hear about the Mahayana Dhamma, then we will usually also hear about the practices that those of the Mahayana, the Bodhisattvas, that they engage in. So these we will know are the six perfections. And so when one has studied a lot and come to understand the six perfections, then whilst one is studying the six perfections and coming to understand them well, one needs to reflect. So there are two parts here. The one part is one needs to receive many teachings to gain knowledge and to gain understanding of this knowledge, not to leave it as mere knowledge, one has to reflect. Therefore, having heard about the practices of a bodhisattva, for example, generosity, one has gained a lot of knowledge. So then one needs to investigate that what one has heard, investigate that knowledge. And this then is contemplation or reflection. So now one is going to meditate on generosity. Come and do so as to come to an unmistaken understanding of generosity, so that no doubts or misunderstandings can arise that would impede one's own practice or to be able to later guide others. So then when reflecting on generosity, one's doing so now on the basis of all the teachings that one has been hearing. And again, just to make the point, without having heard a lot of teachings on generosity, one's not going to do much, much in the way of reflection on it. One needs to have acquired knowledge. So then one is engaging in meditation. So what is meant by generosity? Is it the being that I am generous towards, is it what I am generous with, the substance, or is it something non-material such as consciousness? So is generosity matter or form, or is it consciousness? And we can look at three areas. Let's say if one is offering food. Easy example, food is offered to someone or to a being. It's food that is being offered, and then there's some mental engagement, there's some mind present. So where amongst this is generosity? Is it the person that's being offered to? Is it the substance being offered? Is it the mind doing the offering? So something immaterial. So if it were the substance being offered, then what if no substance was being offered? If the person had a mere wish to offer but didn't offer, would that be generosity or not? And what if there was a wish to offer but no substance given? That's the same thing. Would that be generosity or not? Or if something was left aside and someone else consumed it, so there's no thought, no motivation or intention to give, someone just took what was aside, would that have been generosity? So without the presence of mind. So here then one needs to investigate, because what one is trying to do is come to understand experientially with wisdom what one has heard, and to thereby eliminate any doubts or misunderstandings. So one should come to see that generosity, it can be practiced without actually giving anything. If there's an intention, or an intention expressed perhaps through visualization, or just the intention to give, that is what is said to be generosity. So if that is the case, then amongst our many different minds, then which mind is generosity? So we have there are five omnipresent mental factors. So there's always these five mental factors present with every main mind, with every main consciousness. So these are feeling, their discrimination, their intention, mental engagement, and contact. So now one investigates and thinks, so if generosity is a mind, it should be in one of these omnipresent mental factors. Is it feeling, which is a pleasant feeling, and a unpleasant feeling, a neutral feeling? Well, that's not generosity. Is it the mind of discrimination, discriminating between that object or that object? That's not generosity. The fourth one, mental engagement, that's not, nor contact, meeting the objects. It's none of those. And what about intention, the third of the five? So intention, the wish to give, the aspiration to give, the motivation to give, this is the mind of generosity. So in this way, through analyzing like this, we come to see for ourselves what generosity is, what the entity of generosity is, we come to know the entity of generosity, or to understand the meaning of generosity. And this only comes about, firstly, through hearing teachings, and then secondly, through contemplating or reflecting on what one has heard. And in this way, one gives rise to a clear understanding of what one has been studying, and thereby dispels all doubts or misunderstandings from arising.
Good. 되네. 제세 유지 진바도 유. 제 영어보디 진바다네. 제. 하디 진바도 하고 지비 제 진바도 유. 다 진바원에 대 가래라나. 삼로 이 콜야. 제기 인생에 삼로디. 어디 진바원에 뒤에. 세상 진바원에 제기 인생에 삼바디 진바제. 다 되네 게 제 영어보디 진비 제제. 제사 강사 진비 유제. 강사 소소라나 진바동업에 강사하세요. 대시간도 진바세에 가는 신나면 아선배이 태섬다. 나는 제기 뭐보디 진바이나 선배기 진바리 선배이나 니 로셰차들 와다. 나도 뭐보디 잘라제 잘라디 진바르게 디마 제기 진바 땅구에서 니 잘라지 코로 제 뭐보디 진바리 선배다나. 니 진베 제 말도 진방원이 이름도 와. 대시 진바리 선배나 나 선나로 여바나 선로도 노트샤리 와. 제가 나도 제바지 진비기 디가르스도 똥이 선배디 진바이 마하고여도 고 대시간도
So here, having received many teachings on the Buddhist, many teachings from one's teacher on the Buddhist teaching of generosity, then one has come to quite a good understanding and develops a lot of knowledge, gained a clear understanding of what is meant by generosity. But then this needs to be internalized, and it's internalized through analytical meditation or reflection, contemplation. So here we then investigate four differing objects to find what is truly or accurately meant by generosity. Is generosity the object to which the offering is made, so perhaps the being that the offering is made to? Is it the offering substance? Or is it the person making the offering? Or is it a mind? And if so, amongst the minds, which is it? And then through the process of analysis, we'll see that generosity is, whether something is generous or not, whether we can call something generous or not, is not in relation to the object generosity is performed. It's not in relation to the substance that is offered. It's also not to do with who is doing the offering, but it's rather a mind. And amongst the minds, it is the mental factor of intention. This mental factor of intention is what is generosity. So knowing this, then any doubts or misunderstandings one has will be eliminated. And this is very important, because having come to see for oneself clearly what is meant by generosity, not just reliant on teachings from one's teacher, then when one comes to practice generosity, one will place great emphasis on one's intention, one's motivating mind, knowing that that is generosity. And what is not the act of generosity, the substance being offered or the object being offered to, it is the mind. And knowing that that is generosity, great emphasis will be placed on the cultivation of motivation.
Jimmy Yamlet,
The illustration of giving that's easiest to understand is giving material support to those who are impoverished. And of course, this is generosity. One's helping those in desperate need, and one is providing to them what they do not have, what they lack, but require. And one is doing so with this mental factor of intention, giving to them. So there is this wish to give. But in all circumstances, one is unable to help. One is unable to fulfill the needs of beings. We are not in a position where we can satiate the needs of beings. However, our ability to train our mind and develop this, our wish to give, This we can develop exponentially. This is not dependent on our material abundance. So the way to train or practice generosity, to train our mind in generosity, is through meditation. This is how we develop. And through doing this, the mind that is completely contrary to generosity, that of miserliness, this is overcome. So the mind of miserliness is, the mind of generosity is, I want to give, or I want to help in any way I can. It's this wish to give, whether it's material or a material help or some other kind of help. It's the wish to help, the wish to give. This is the mind of generosity. Its contrary mind, the mind of miserliness, is, I want this for myself. I want to keep this knowledge and the prestige that comes with it to myself. These material goods, I want them for myself. I don't want to give them away. So seeing, understanding then what is the mind of generosity, the wish to give, and the mind of miserliness, the wish to keep for oneself, it's clear they are completely contrary to each other. The stronger the one is, proportionately, the other is weaker. So if a person is particularly miserly, they have a very weak wish to give. However, if we cultivate the mind wanting to give, this wish of generosity, then the contrary mind, that of miserliness, will proportionately weaken. So in meditation, as we engage further and further on the subject of generosity, our wish to help others will grow ever stronger. The wish to use whatever resources and good qualities we have to bring benefit to others will grow ever stronger. And then proportionately, the contrary mind of miserliness will weaken. And if we train in this way repeatedly over a sustained period, we'll see our way of thinking changing. So here we would do this by engaging in meditation as in an undistracted way as possible, where we try and we sit quietly thinking about generosity. So we think, for example, of the benefits that will come from generosity to generate delight within us. The benefits that will follow if only we were able to fulfill the needs of beings. And we can take the illustrations of people that we know or what we observe in the news or the sufferings that we know beings experience. And how wonderful it would be if we could give them the material resources they require, or we could help them in a variety of ways so that they could overcome their problems, overcome all forms of suffering. And in this way, the wish to help, the wish to bring benefit to others, grows ever stronger within us. And then through this, our mind of miserliness gets weaker and weaker. So this we are aware of. The benefits of meditating in generosity on helping others, we'll feel this mind of generosity growing within us. And later, when the opportunity comes to help, that will arise much more spontaneously. The thought of miserliness holding us back will be that much weaker. And where we don't have the capacity to help, still the wish of wishing we had the capacity of wanting to help will arise. And then a third benefit, so the strengthening of generosity, the weakening of miserliness, and thereby benefits to self and others. That's two. The third is that we are fulfilling the spiritual instructions of our teacher, because it's our teacher who has taught us about the practice of generosity, and we now are following that advice. We're cultivating the mind. We're following the advice of the Buddha himself, because our teacher taught that as well. So in this way, we train in generosity, which is the wish to use whatever inequalities or material possessions we have to benefit others. And moreover, through using an analysis, we strengthening our wisdom. And investigating generosity, we're gaining a better understanding of what generosity is. Because it's not necessarily giving to beings what they want. We need to use our wisdom, because there are times one shouldn't give what they desire. Someone who wants to perform harm, if we provide the means to perform harm, this is not generosity. This is giving. Sure, you gave a murderer a gun, they're going to go and commit murder with that. So you gave a hunter a gun, that is not generosity. It's giving, But this is not creating virtue. This is not helping beings attain happiness. And it's not helping us attain enlightenment. So this understanding comes about through using analysis and investigation. When one's making offerings then to the three jewels of the Lama, then again it's important to be very aware of what is meant by generosity, or what is the act of generosity. So let's say you're walking in the grounds here, and you see a Buddha image, and great faith arises within you. So faith then is a mental factor, or generally we'd say a mind, but if we're being specific, it's a mental factor. And then if, with this mind of faith, we then pick a flower from the garden and we offer this to the Buddha statue, then here the Buddha statue that we are offering to, this is the object to which one is making the offering. This offering substance is the flower that is being offered. We ourselves as the person, we are the offerer. And where is the generosity in this act? It is our particular mental factor of intention. So if someone were to ask us, where is the generosity in what you're doing? The mental factor of intention. So knowing that then, we know that this is the key part to cultivate. It's not about the statue, it's not about the flower, it's about the mind of intention. And then when we're not walking around the grounds, we're sitting on our cushion and we're training our mind in generosity, can visualize a lama, and we can imagine offering all our resources and all our qualities to our lama. So this is an entirely mental process. Our teacher is not before us. We're not offering anything, any material substance. All we are doing is practicing generosity through strengthening this mental factor of intention. And this is the practice of generosity.
Jimba 최고 무슨 부여 말하다. 네게네 소식이 메도로 같은 부여들아. 나 가르 부여네 제지 부여도 내 최고 부와세요. 부와 부와세요. 진짜 네 인자 부와다 진배 냠는 제바다 진배 땅왕이라 해봐. 최배 냠는 최고 부여 냠는 제바다 최고 부와니라 해봐 이렇게 이제. 네 인자 아 진배 냠는 지위에서 이제 즉 소식이 시안이야. 제기 제 투여 유버 Roger, two years, you were here by now. I did the team met, I didn't know the team, 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 I 누구에나 잘래 로지 투고 투고로 제고고로 봐. 네 제 투여기 제마도 봐도 가르쳐서 삼로 세나 좀게 잘래 제 투고 말. 네 세나는 마 점에 된다라. 먼저 땡이서 삼로 장. 네 장도 네 제고 가르고서 잘래 로지 봐고 제고. 진짜 네 나신 아주 최고 푸기인 세베 삼로디 아주 세네 온게 최고 푸기 푸기 세나 요바다. 이 소소한 부여 누구 연하 부마서 뭐 연구를 되니까 이 세나의 마 정보를 이 점에 둔다 이 푸기 푸기에서 삼보다 야네 양도지 그래서 되니까 소소기 부여 그 누구가 고급으로 중요나 되니 삼사 되니 쇼가 푸고 보러 와 되니까 다 진보 땅 세야다 진보 냠낸 제야다 되니기 진보 땅이 땅이 내가 소소기 땅이 집에 냠낸 제가 진보 땅 아래 진보 냠낸 제가 니가 잘 그래 다 소소기 다 소식이 진바타에 그 니바 메바나 소소기 파제 그 고급 니바로 그 고급라 메바나 소소라나게 푸기 세베데네 고급라는데 푸기 제기 세베게 삼로지 자나 지메냐면 제바레서 지나 되네다 마음 주기 니제디 하고 세무로지 제자 두 세는 다시 제바이나 제바제디 진비 모세 되네시 하고 되네 진바 냠는 제세 되네실 제바데 진비 냠는 지고레스 Dini cheba di jimba tangwa la gwa rsa, cha sang zha hao gu tu gwa rwa, dini inza, dini ge sam, sam tang di duan dai hao gu yadu, dini te sum di ge xe rwa, te sum ya la cha yu ge, dongwa di ge xe rwa, ge su gwa da.
So let's look at some, again at what is meant by generosity. If we take the term praxis generosity. So when we practice generosity, what does this mean? So the literal translation for praxis is gain experience of. So this should point one to what is meant by practicing generosity. It's cultivating the wish to give. It's sitting in meditation, or it's hearing teachings and reflecting on those teachings and generating this repeated wish: may I help others, may I bring benefit to others. In these circumstances, may I help in this way, may I help in these kinds of ways. And generating the wish ever more to be of help to others, to be of service to others, to give of ourselves to others. So this is the practice of generosity. It, however, is not actually engaging in generosity. Because if one thinks, oh, I engage in generosity all the time, but one actually never does so, then there is part that is missing. So we need to cultivate this mind of wishing to give. And then when we actually engage in generosity, this would be when we give to others, whether it is giving material resources, or giving help through physical help, or help through our speech. In whatever way, this giving of help, this is engaging in generosity. We need to put our time and energy into the practice of generosity, the cultivation of this wish to give, but we also need to engage in generosity, so in going, doing the physical and verbal act of giving. And the reason we need both is if one develops, oh, I'd love to give, I want to give, I want to give, but never does, probably the miserliness hasn't been reduced very much. And it will be the miserliness that is holding us back from helping when we have the ability to do so. So therefore, the energy needs and time needs to go into the practice, the mental development, but then this also needs to be acted out on, lived. One needs to then express this mind that one has cultivated through helping others. This is how one can be more confident that the selfish mind of miserliness, this is weakening, and the altruistic attitude of wanting to help, this is strengthening. So in generosity then, this wish to help is what will overcome miserliness, and miserliness is a mind that prevents us from helping others, especially when we understand generosity in not just material generosity, but helping others through physically offering assistance, verbally teaching the Dharma, giving advice, etc. This wide array of bringing benefit to others, and miserliness stops us from doing this. The more we train, though, in the mental aspects, the practice of generosity, then we will start to seek out the opportunities to engage in generosity. And when we encounter those generosities, we'll embrace those opportunities to help others. So that ever stronger engagement will come from the practice of generosity. And when we do so, because of using our analytical meditation and having come to a clear and unmistaken understanding of what is generosity, we won't practice generosity, engage in generosity with a distracted a mind or more thinking about the joy that's coming to others. We'll be having a mind of the intention, this intention to give. This will be dominant because we'll understand that itself is the act of generosity, not the substance, not the person being offered to, not the one helping, but it is that mind of intention. And we will make sure that that is powerful and will explicitly or manifestly generate this wish to give. And to get to that point depends on hearing and reflecting. In this way, doubts and misunderstandings become completely eliminated. So what we've looked at then this afternoon is similar to what we looked at this morning. The two classes led in, this sequence of verses led into each other. So the way then to incorporate this into our meditation practice. So the first step, though, is the first step of the meditation is to generate a powerful and a power of mind and a joyous mind through a refuge and reflecting on the opportunities we've attained. The second part of the meditation was to generate the mind of definite emergence, the mind that wants to definitely emerge from cyclic existence through having seen all the faults of samsara and how suffering pervades samsara. And then the third step of the meditation was to generate bodhicitta through taking this experience that we've had in the previous step of the meditation and applying it to others, seeing how they too have the same wish and they are no different from us in having a right for happiness and longing for happiness. And then we develop bodhicitta ever further in the way that has been described previously. And when we give rise to this wish to become a Buddha for the sake of others, we remind ourselves that this can only be done if one can only actualize this aspiration to attain enlightenment for others if one repeatedly hears teachings and then reflects on these teachings and then meditates on these teachings. And then one progresses to the fourth step of the meditation, which are the activities of a bodhisattva, namely the six perfections. So we've heard a lot now about generosity. And with the practice of generosity, we've come to understand this more clearly. And here we give rise to the wish through meditating on generosity. May I use my body, may I use of what remains of this life, may I use my material resources and all my inner good qualities. In other words, whatever is mine, may I use this to bring benefit to others. Here we generate this sincere wish to bring benefit to others. And similarly then, with the practice of ethical conduct, we also commit, as with generosity, that through our body, our speech and our mind, we'll bring no harm. So generosity is with our body, speech and mind to benefit others. And ethical conduct is not to bring harm. Then thirdly, with patience, that in engaging in activities to benefit others, I will experience hardships. Through cultivating my own spiritual qualities, through studying, through receiving teachings, through meditating, I will experience hardships. I will forbear with these hardships. I will be patient with them. I'll be tolerant with them. I'll put up with them. I won't let them throw me from the path of achieving this great goal. And then fourthly, the mind of joyous perseverance, generating great delight in our opportunity to engage in virtuous activities, wanting to do so evermore. So that's the fourth step of the meditation, reflecting on the six perfections, the activities of bodhisattvas. And then lastly, when we come to dedicate this prayer, dedicate this virtue, with an understanding of emptiness, we dedicate this virtue that may our spiritual guides, such as His Holiness and Lama Zopa, may they remain stably in this world, continuing to be of ever greater benefit to sentient beings. And may I, through the accomplishment of my teacher's instructions, may I quickly progress to become a Buddha for the sake of others. And in order for this aspiration to be achieved, I commit to continuing to engage in study, reflecting and meditating so as to give rise to the mind of bodhicitta and engage in the six perfections. And these kinds of prayers, this kind of meditation, through engaging in repeatedly over a sustained period, change will come to us, benefit will come to ourselves and all sentient beings. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So tomorrow we will continue in the text, and we've now, in terms of the beginning, middle, and end, if we combine, if we compare this to hearing, reflecting, and meditating, we've heard about the presentation on the beginning, which is hearing, and we completed that perhaps yesterday or today, and now today we have finished the middle part, that of reflection. Now we come to the end part in this way of dividing, that of meditation. So that's where we will start tomorrow. Okay. If you have questions, then Andy's friend, Aaron.
It's about the omnipresent mental factor of intention. I thought the omnipresent mental factors were neutral, whereas the mind is giving its virtue. So that's one thing. I'm thinking something that is neutral, where is nature virtue. And secondly, if the opposite of the mind of giving is miserliness, which is one of the 20 non-virtuous mental factors, why then wouldn't miserliness be the omnipresent mental factor of intention also?
Okay.
Because they're just diametrically opposite. Why?
Sure. Okay. So two questions. The first being, as I understand, the omnipresent mental factors, these are neutral in nature. Generosity is virtuous in nature.
Yep.
So how does that sit together?
Yep.
Then we heard that the opposite of generosity is miserliness, and miserliness is one of the 20 non-virtuous mental factors.
Mm-hmm.
So then why is miserliness not then also intention?
Yep.
Yeah? Okay. Country ni shusa. Then a simtung after no tick dung la. Then a the kundu nga dental, konso chikuna tang yom sekere. Geva mi geva tang yom. Dire. The konso tang yom re ye koso. Tang yom yin. The kundu nga. Kundu nga. The konso tang yom. Then a jimpa koran, sempa yina. Deni kung kundro re, deni kung tangyom re, deni tangyom re, kung gesem re, gesem re. Re? Zechang kandis kung kundro re, jimpa re. Di chikze, deni jimpa le dokchok serna re. Serna se korang kung nyenyon chik, nyenyon.
Nyenyon.
Nyenyon chik re. Deni yenyo nishu nonga kong chikire. Deni kong yang sempa re marepe.
Tadi kundur lagi anjur, kundur ngah selainnya ni, soal tu je sembah jila sebab apa ngah selain kundur ni boleh. Di, ini sembuh kunci kalau soal jinja kundur ni lah. Jadi ini jinja soal tu je sembah je kundur ni sembah je kalau. Ini dikali soal tanya.
Tanya mana? Kundur ngah konsol mobo kali ni. Tang yom re. Tang konso gewa ma gese ma re.
Mangu yo re. Kunro nga la gewa inge yo re. Gewa inge yo re. Tang yom re. Niga sunga yo re. Tate nga to gewa sem. Gewe sem ki ko do chun yu. Kunro chasang gewa cha. Tene. Migewe sem ki ko do chun yu. Kunro chasang migewa cha. Taya. Tang yom. Sem ki ko do chun yu. Kunro chasang tang yom cha. Tang yom de la. Kato kunro de la gewa yo re. Migewa yo re.
So the five omnipresent mental factors, which are again feeling, discrimination, intention, mental engagement, and contact, these are in nature virtuous, non-virtuous, neutral. They can be all three. Well, not at the same time, but they can be any of the three, rather. So that would answer your first question. So that when the intention, the mind, the mental factor of intention is generosity, the giving, the mind, wish to give, then it's going to be virtuous. When the mind is mindlessness, so now your second question, when the mind, the mental factor of mindlessness is the intention, so the intention to keep for oneself, then the mental factor of intention will be non-virtuous. Okay? Okay, good, thank you. Other questions? Okay, then thank you very much.